Welcome to End of Life University Podcast, where we share real talk about life and death. I'm your host, Dr. Karen Wyatt, and I want to thank you for joining me here today for episode number 532. I'm going to be sharing with you in just a moment a conversation I had with Gail Shapiro about writing your own obituary and how that could be an important part of legacy planning. And which hadn't really occurred to me before. And so I had a lot to learn from Gail, and she also shares her best practices and tips for writing obituaries, which is really interesting. So I think you'll enjoy this conversation. As for announcements, I'll mention once again that my new book, Wild and Holy, A Journey Through Grief, Guilt, and Grace in Italy, is now available for sale on Amazon and other online outlets, but also in bookstores. You can ask them to order it for you, Wild and Holy by Karen Wyatt. And I had been announcing that I was planning to do a wild and holy night, a grief night for us to gather together, those who've read the book, at the end of this month. But it turns out I don't think that is possible to happen this year. I haven't been mentioning this, but we're going on 3 months now. My kids and grandkids have been living with me here in a little two-bedroom condo. And so we have crowded spaces, a lot of chaos going on, and even to produce these podcast episodes every week has been quite a task in the midst of a toddler and a baby, diaper changes, and sickness, which we're all dealing with right now. It made me realize it's just not realistic that I can put on a big workshop night of grieving together yet. That has to come a little bit later. I'm trying to learn some of my own lessons. And one thing I wrote about recently in my Substack post was not just yet, how sometimes we have to make sure we're not rushing ahead too much in our tasks and that we allow enough time to go through and enough time to pass to be fully ready to manifest what we want to do. And I think that's the case with this wild and holy night that I definitely want to do. It would tie in beautifully with the end of the year and the holiday season, but I simply don't have the bandwidth or the time or the quiet space to do it. So I will let you know after the first of the year when things settle down here, when that might take place. In the meantime, you can get a hold of the book if you'd like and start reading it, and then join me in the new year for a conversation about grief. I want to also thank my latest supporter on Patreon, Adele Flaherty, and also thank Jen Davidson for upping your pledge on Patreon. And thanks to everyone who's been offering their support through this platform for several years now. It really means a lot to me, and it helps me keep this show on the air and also the YouTube channel. And if you're interested in supporting, you can go directly to Patreon, patreon.com/EOLU. Or if you go to eoluniversity.com/support, you'll find three different ways you can offer a small financial contribution to help keep this show on the air. And that includes the Patreon page, but you could also buy me a coffee every now and then or make a one-time donation through PayPal. And you'll find links for all of those at eoluniversity.com/support. So we will move on now with my conversation with Gail Shapiro. I'll come back afterwards with a few takeaways and to say goodbye. So here we go. Today, I'm so happy to welcome my special guest, Gail Shapiro. Gail is a seasoned writer and editor and also a professional organizer who is certified as a life transitions specialist. She has helped hundreds of clients bring order and clarity to their homes and offices and guided many through the organizational details of end-of-life planning. And as the co-founder of Womankind's Financial Literacy Project, the first nonprofit's nonprofit of its kind, which reached thousands of women in the U.S. and Canada. She is experienced in guiding clients to deal with uncomfortable personal topics. Gail is the author of 6 nonfiction books and 1 novel, To Sisterhood, and holds a graduate degree in education from Harvard University. Today, we'll be talking together about writing your own obituary, which I'm really excited to discuss with Gail, and you can learn more about her work at her website, GailShapiro.com. So Gail, welcome, and thanks for joining me today.
Oh, thank you, Karen, for that nice introduction and for inviting me here today. And to all of you, and also thank you to all of your listeners for tuning in for what can be an emotional and difficult topic. With my service called Obituary Yours, I help clients plan and draft their own obituary now, relieving the future burden on their loved ones.
And I'm really excited to talk about this because it's a subject I haven't covered much on this podcast, and yet it is important. And I think perhaps obituaries often get overlooked when people are doing their own end-of-life planning. Do you find that to be true?
Yes. A lot of people just don't think about it or don't want to. You know, nobody really wants to think about end-of-life planning, but we all know we have to do it, and it feels so much better when it's done. But people don't really think about what they want to say in their obituaries, except for my mother. My mother, right? She wanted to hear her eulogy, and she wanted me to write it ahead of time so she could correct it for me. Oh. I said, "No, Mom, that's kind of morbid. We're not doing that." And she kept nagging and nagging and nagging. I finally said, "Okay, I'm going to tell you the first sentence," and it is what I used for her eulogy. And that was, "Always leave," my mother always said, "Always leave the party when you're still having fun." And she did.
So. Oh, I love that. That's beautiful.
Anyway, so
that's actually a really good example how of a single sentence can tell you so much about a person, because somehow I already feel like I know something about your mom.
Oh, yeah. She made everything a celebration. I'll tell mom about that later. But anyway, so.
Well, how did you get interested in obituary writing?
Well, it wasn't really an interest, Karen. It was sort of a necessity. You know, as a writer and editor, I've been helping friends write obituaries for their loved ones for years, but I didn't start this new arm of my writing business until pretty recently. In the last 3 years, I had a rapid series of losses of those very close to me. My mother, 5 months later, my father, 6 months later, quite unexpectedly, my very healthy 71-year-old husband had a short illness, and we thought he'd recover, but he did not. And that was really a shock. And then in the meantime, in those same few years, several cousins who were close to me, some weren't close, some were closer, but it was just boom, boom, boom. And I just thought, yeah, I have to do this.
Wow. That's quite...
Yeah, it was a lot. It was a lot.
Yeah, quite. Talking about cumulative grief, that's a huge burden. Yeah.
So one of my cousins died last year, and this is what really got me started thinking I should just do this for other people, because I've been helping people for years. He never married. He had no children, and he had no siblings. He was close to some. I had 21 first cousins, and 20 of them were here until a few years ago. And when this one died, they wrote his obituary. Some of the other cousins to whom he was a little closer gave some facts to the funeral home, but they used AI to write his obituary, and it wasn't very good. Mm. Looked at it and I said, that doesn't sound at all like him. And he was a physician. They wrote, you know, he was an emergency room physician. His patients were very fond of him. He was dedicated. It sounded nothing like who he was as a person. So I asked if I could redo it. And the cousins who were closest said yes. And it made it sound like him. And one of the cousins said, you should go into business doing this. I said, well, I'm already in writing business, but it's a good arm to add. So that's what I did.
Mm. So. And it's actually a more important service than anyone may realize. And you've included the idea of why it's important perhaps for us to write our own obituaries as part of our end of life planning. So let's talk about that, about the benefits of doing that for ourselves.
Absolutely. Well, not all of us, but most of us likely will have an obituary written. Some people just don't want one. And I'm sure many of you and many of the listeners have had the experience of like reading an obituary or attending a funeral of someone in your community and realizing, wow, I never knew that about them. I mean, that happens all the time. And because there's things that people just don't know about you. So you may not care what's said about you once you're gone. But there's many of us, especially those of us who enjoy just a wee bit of control, like me, who how we want to be remembered shouldn't be left to chance for those people. So pre-writing your obituary ensures that your story is told the way you want it told. And I would say, like, your obituary doesn't have to be a somber bulletin. It can be a testament to who you truly are, and it can really show your personality. And I don't want to put you on the spot, and if you want to edit this out, you can, certainly. But I know I've listened to several of your podcasts throughout the years, and when you talked about the tragic loss of your father, which was obviously sudden, was it left to you to write his obituary?
No, if I remember correctly, the funeral home wrote it, but yeah. They got some details from us, I think, because we were all just too devastated. And yes. our really big question was how honest to be in the obituary. Should it talk about how he died?
Right.
And we were advised not to just make it vague and to say he died at home mm-hmm. unexpectedly.
Yeah.
Which is what it said. But I don't remember feeling any comfort or any satisfaction at all with the obituary. I think it was much more kind of what you described, like a generic, he was born here, he married this person, he did this, he worked here, he did that. Just a recitation of some of the facts from his life, but didn't really tell anything about the man that he was. And looking back now, that feels so sad to me.
I hear you. I'm going to address that a little bit later on in this. What you do, what you want to put it in and what you don't. But let me talk a little bit more about why should you pre-write your obituary? And there's probably two reasons at least. One is sparing your survivors. As I know, when I had to write my husband's literally overnight, I was in shock. We didn't expect he was going to die. He didn't expect he was going to die. I talked to him an hour and a half before his heart stopped and he was, I'll see you soon, honey. As we know, we don't always know when it's going to happen. So, mm-hmm. So after a sudden or even an expected death, loved ones really feel overwhelmed, having to plan a funeral and compose a tribute and really try to capture the essence of who your loved one was and do them honor and justice is really such a stressful thing at an already difficult time. And particularly if, like ours, the family is Jewish or Muslim, the deceased must be buried immediately, ideally within 24 hours, if at all possible. So to announce the funeral, the obituary has to be written right away.
Mm.
If you're Christian, you can wait a week, but not so if you're Jewish or Muslim. And I don't know about other cultures, but it's tough.
Yeah, as you said, I mean, most of us are still in shock and numbness right after a death, and it's very hard to come up with the words. How do you describe this person that just died, or what special stories would you like to tell that convey the essence of who they are?
Yeah, I'm sorry, I think my screen just froze and I didn't hear the last thing you said. Could you repeat? I'm assuming you can.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that right after a death, as you said, whether expected or unexpected, most of us are in shock and mm-hmm. numbness, mm-hmm. and it's very difficult to come up with the words to describe the person we love, let alone tell some interesting stories that might convey more information about who they are.
Right. So one of them, so yeah, so two, so, so the second reason is, you know, one is to spare your loved ones, and two is to tell your own story in your own words. You know, without your input, your survivors may miss key themes or even misinterpret your essence, even if they knew you very well. There's things you may want that they wouldn't think to say. So pre-writing your obituary offers you a measure of control, and it offers peace for your survivors later, a little bit of peace. So there's an exercise that your listeners might want to try, and that I always suggest to my clients is to jot down one word or a short phrase that you'd like your loved ones to remember you by. And, you know, like I said about my mother, that was pretty much who she was. And I'll tell you one other thing about her in a minute. And the other one is perhaps to jot down a favorite personal story or a passion, something that you'd like included. Now, my mother, as I said, blessed memory, or I think it was her name, she made every get-together a celebration. And a bumper sticker that I actually gave her that was on her refrigerator for years was, "Don't postpone joy." And we ended up putting that on her headstone.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. And so that's, you know, there was a lot more to her, but that had to be there. So what is it, you know, I invite your listeners to think about, what is it, if you had a bumper sticker or just a short phrase that really captured who you are or who you were, what would it be? And it's a hard, you know, take some thought. Take some thought.
And I really like the idea of what wisdom maybe have you learned in your life, like don't postpone joy, that you'd love to pass on to other people, that kind of sums up what you've been learning while you've gone through this lifetime.
Yeah, it's really quite interesting if you think about how do you, you know, how would you put your life on a bumper sticker? You can't, but in 400 to 600 words, you can capture who you are pretty well. So what else can I tell you? What should...
Well, you were just mentioning 400 to 600 words. I was going to say to you that I mentioned this to you before we started recording. My mother wrote her own obituary, and it was really lovely, but it was extremely long. And I had no idea how expensive it is to publish an obituary in a newspaper, which she really wanted it to be in our local paper. And it was just prohibitively expensive to publish the whole thing. So I had to edit it down quite a lot. And
yeah.
I wanted to ask if you've experienced that in other places as well.
Well, I know I can tell you that when my mother-in-law passed, we wrote an obituary we thought was an appropriate length, and I was shocked to find how much it cost to put it in our local paper. It was not local, but we did it anyway to honor her. But it is a cost that people don't expect. Now, a lot of places now, especially if you use, you know, a particular funeral home, they will put it online. It goes on legacy.com, and there's some other sites, and that's free. So if you want it in the newspaper, make a provision in your will, or make a provision with your, you know, whosoever your executor, to say, I want to pay for this, because you don't want to leave that to somebody else.
Yeah. And so you had mentioned 400 to 600 words. Is that a good length in general for an obituary?
I think so. I mean, mostly I've seen some that are much shorter than that, and I've seen about 600 words is about, that's a good length. You can tell somebody's story in 600 words. I was the editor of a business magazine for years, and we told people they had a 35 word bio. Try cutting down your entire career into 35 words.
Wow.
So 600 words, you can actually tell plenty. So, and it depends, you know, what you put in and what you keep out, and we can talk about that if you want.
Oh yeah, I'd love to. Because it seems to me like this, there is an art to obituary writing. I mean, it's its own unique type of writing, different from other writing we might do.
Yeah, it is. There's a lot of, first of all, I can say, you know, like, you can do this yourself. You don't need me. I mean, I'm not a very good salesperson. I'll tell you. It is very easy to talk myself out of business. But honestly, you can do it yourself. There's plenty of information online. There are online workshops, and there's in-person workshops on how to write your own obituary. And you can just Google it or whatever and use whatever and say, you know, do this, do this, do this. But as you say, there's an art to it. And it's like everything else. You can do it, or you can do it well, you can do it in your own way, whatever. So you don't need me, but if you need help, I'm here. That's kind of how I see it. What should be in an obituary? And I think you'd asked me ahead of time, like, what should not be? And this is back to the story you told before about your father. Generally, it should include vital statistics, date, places where you were born, and so forth. A quick summary of your life, career, family roles, major milestones, what you did for a living, who your people are, that sort of thing. Memberships in organizations that are important to you. Military service, if any. Character highlights, I would say, your values, your quirks, your favorite pastimes. People do things like, collect books. My husband was very proud of his almost complete collection of early Edgar Rice Burroughs books. He's a Tarzan fan and all that. And that I put that in there because it was really important to him. And he ran many marathons, and he was a jock for his whole lifetime, and did charity bike rides and that sort of thing. And that sort of captured who he was, as well as his love for aviation, which was his field. And in my mother's, and I'm just talking about mine because I can't talk about my clients, obviously, because that's private. So I can talk about my own family. My mother was the longest ever, the longest serving UNICEF volunteer ever.
Wow.
She was the UNICEF chairman in our town for 60 or 61 years. And that was really important to her. So that kind of leads into, in the obituary, what charity or charities would you want donations to go to? Reason I ask that is because very often, and it's fine if the family wants to do this, the family in their shock and grief will simply say donations should go to, and then fill in either the place where the person died, the hospital or the hospice center or the organization that's doing research on the disease that they died from. And that's perfectly fine. However, those are not necessarily the charities that you supported during your lifetime. Do you see the difference?
That makes so much sense.
Yes.
And it's even more compelling to want to donate to a charity when you know it was personal for the person who died, that they've been supporting it and part of that organization for their whole lives.
Right. And my parents were in the toy business. My family's been in the toy business for years. And so for my dad's, we asked for, any children's charities because he loved kids and all his grandkids and great grandkids, and or, an organization did something for the arts because he was an artist, and just, that. So it's very personal. It's very personal, and it's where you want, where you want support to go. So let me see what else. Details, obviously, of funeral and visitation. You can't write that, but you'll leave a blank for that. And maybe you'd want to include a message or a favorite quote, like my mother's, or something else that, something you always said that people say, oh, yeah, she always said that, or whatever. Okay.
And then, what about coming up with just the right story? Because it seems like that's what can set an obituary apart for each person. Having the best little short story that sums up who that person is.
Yeah, well, I would, that was one of the things, and I have sort of a list of decisions that I go through with my clients, and that's one of them. Would you like to include an anecdote or a quote that illustrates who you are or illustrates your values, or to tell us, as you said, or to tell a story about something that really sums up your life? I have some other decisions that I encourage people to make. And that is one, and you brought this up before when you were speaking about your father. Do you or do you not want to include the cause of death? And for example, and this again, I don't keep bringing up my family, but I can't talk about my clients. So I'll give you, vague examples, but basically I want to talk about my own family because I feel comfortable doing that. My parents died, as I said, 5 months apart at ages 95 and 99. And there was really no cause for speculation. They died. They were old. But when you see an obituary of a person who died suddenly, in quotes. That raises questions, which, although as we both know, is in the height of poor taste, will cause people to ask questions your family may not be comfortable answering, want to answer, and that's hard. So do you want to say what happened? And there are some people who very clearly, and there was somebody in my community recently who said their daughter took her own life. And is that comforting? And is that going to bring comfort to your family to say you're not alone in a suicide death? Or if it's a drug overdose, if it's a young person, you always assume it's either suicide, drugs, or an accident, unless it says they had some disease. But that's your decision. And you, well, it is your survivor's decision, but you have a lot of input into this.
Yeah, so, it's an interesting question, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's something I talk about with my clients, and I really get all different answers, Karen. I mean, nobody says to me, I'm going to commit suicide, so put that in, you know, usually, or I'm planning to do a drug overdose, but things happen. And we don't know.
Yeah, so true. And I guess from my perspective now, after all these years, after all the interviews I've done and learning so much, I lean more toward it's good when we can have honest conversations with people and tell the truth about death and dying and end of life. And so I do value that when people have the courage to go ahead and be honest in obituary, but I also have compassion when it's just too private and too painful sometimes. And maybe it's too soon to reveal any of the details. The family might not be ready for it.
Exactly. And that's why when you see suddenly, what does that mean? Did he have a heart attack at the, you know, on the golf course? Or we don't know. We don't know. So it's actually nobody's business but the families. And yet people ask. And as you well know, because I've listened to many of your songs, you know, people often say really stupid things to people who are crazy.
Yes, it's so true.
And I'm saying stupid very clearly because we like to think charitably that people mean well. But in my experience, not everybody means well. Some people really just want to feel more comfortable themselves and they don't really care about you.
Yeah, that's very true.
Make me not hurt. Make me not have to deal with your grief. Make me, you know, anyway, but that's a tip topic for another time. So that is one question I always bring up, and people have very different answers. And I'd say it's pretty much half and half. People say, tell them how I died. Tell them, or don't. Just say they died. So I think that's kind of split down the middle. Another decision I ask, is this too much information?
No. Yeah. Oh, this is really good.
Okay, good. Another decision I ask people to make is, do you want to use religious language or not? And if so, what would bring you and your loved ones comfort? Phrases you'll see sometimes is, you know, he was welcomed into the kingdom of heaven, or specific verses from religious texts, if those resonate with you. And if you really don't want that, and I've seen this too, you need to specify to your survivors. I have seen people who broke away from their families who did not follow the religion they were raised in, and they know darn well their families would put in things that they would not want to have. So you don't really get final control if you're dead, but you can make your wishes known one way or the other.
And I think that's a situation when it's imperative to write your own obituary to make sure the language fits what you want and how you want to be, how you want to be presented.
Exactly. You know, your family may not be religious at all, and you are, and you want something that's comforting to you and the people you in your congregation or your community. And, you know, it's just all over the place. So you don't really think about this stuff ahead of time unless you sit down and just take a little bit of time to make some decisions. The other thing is, we talked a little bit about the cause of death, but hold on a second. Some water. Do you want to say anything about the circumstances of your death, not the cause? In other words, do you want to say surrounded by family, or died peacefully, or died at home, or they died in the name of the hospital or the hospice facility, or not? up to you. Some people find that a comfort. Some people don't care. Some people like to say surrounded by family. Some people have no family. And again, very personal decision. Another thing, sort of on a less emotional note, is if you were prominent in your field, would you like to include a statement from a colleague or two? I mean, I had an obituary of somebody who died, and it was in the New York Times, so obviously they had this prepared ahead of time, and they quoted two or three of his colleagues, teach what he taught them, what he meant to them, so forth and so on. Is that something you would like in there? Not everybody's going to be in the New York Times, but you can write your own. And here's a really sticky one. Do you want to include your ex-spouse among your survivors, especially if they were the parent of your children? Now, if you ask that to anybody who'd been married before, you will get two answers. Of course, they were my first love, they were married, they were my parent, they were my children's parents. And other people would say, not, no way, Jose, just not happening. No, and no. And I've seen both. I've seen both. There was one recently where people were divorced and they stayed best friends. They had children and grandchildren together, and she was present among the mourners, even though they'd been divorced for many years, and it was lovely. And other people have no relationship with their ex-spouse and definitely don't want them in there.
And once again, something, a good reason to write your own if you care about that, because another person just may not know your feelings about it and may include or exclude information that you'd like to be part of it.
Exactly. And your children may say, well, that was my mother, that was my father. They have to be, but you wouldn't want them there. So yeah. And again, you don't really get final say, but you can make your wishes known, and people, we hope, will respect what you've written. So yeah.
Yeah, this is really good for consideration, and to realize there's a lot more to it than you might think. And another reason why I can see why AI isn't necessarily capable of writing the best obituary, because there's so many decisions that need to be made and really nuances that need to be considered in writing the obituary.
I'd like to talk about it, if you don't mind, just in a minute, because I wanted to just talk about first, and I definitely have a really want to talk about AI because I have a lot of experience, good, positive, and negative. I just wanted to talk about first what to leave out of an obituary.
Okay, good idea.
Okay. So, your exact birth date and your mother's birth name, if privacy and identity theft is a concern, particularly if you have a common name. And what I mean by that is, back when I teach financial literacy to women, I say, I ask them, and this is how it's connected, what's the longest relationship you'll ever have in your life? And people will say, well, my spouse or my children or my dog or whatever. But the true answer is you and your credit. That goes beyond death. So if you put in your birth date, your mother's maiden name, the place you were born, and you have a fairly common name, you're setting yourself, your survivors, your for possible identity theft. And it is a mess. I haven't experienced it personally, but I've seen it. To clear a stolen identity from someone who's deceased. And I don't want to get into the terrible details, but you might want to consider not putting in those particular things. Put in your year of birth, but not particularly your birthday. Another thing not to put in is too many dates or details, like every job you ever had. Like when I die, nobody really needs to know that I worked as a draft counselor during the Vietnam War. Nobody needs to know that I was an artist model to put myself through college. Nobody cares. That's not important to me. If people have long resumes, some people have one career, and some people have many, many different things. Another thing to leave out, and this is a sticky one too, is family drama. Estranged children or estranged siblings. Do you put them in or not? And I've seen people go both ways. I had one client whose sister hadn't talked to her in 30 years. Was she listed? Would she want to be listed as a survivor or not? And what about her children? I don't know. You know, that's not my decision. Yeah, there's a lot to think about. go ahead.
Yeah, a lot of tricky decisions.
Yeah. There's also, if you are, another decision when I say family drama is if you happen to be related to somebody who is prominent in the news for not something that's not so good, do you want to leave them out? Be the niece of fill in the blank. I don't want to mention any names here. You know, somebody who was in the news for a scandal. Or who person, no, they have the same last name. I wonder if blah, blah, blah. Well, your choice. You know, your choice. And here's another one that's very emotional, and really, I've seen people come down on both sides of this. And that is language that might upset or offend the family. For example, and I'm gonna, and I hope it doesn't offend anybody who's listening. You often see something like, so and so died after a valiant battle with whatever disease. And that is true, if you want to say it that way, but some find that extremely judgmental, like you failed and you lost a war. And some people really find that language not okay.
And I understand that because it really does set it up as if it's a win-lose situation, and that somehow they failed at the battle and lost it. And yeah.
And you see that language a lot, and I understand why people put it in, and that's the family's choice. But if you know you have a disease that's likely to be fatal and you don't want that in there, say so ahead of time. Or say it the other way around. You know, if that's what you want, you really struggled hard and that's the language you want. It's not my call. Do it, you know, it's your call. So yeah. That's just another thing I encourage my clients to think about. Another thing is embarrassing or very highly personal content. Like if you had a famous lover, do you want this or don't you? So and so had a relationship with, and you see this in celebrity news all the time, but for the regular folks here, your call again. And whatever you do, please, when you finish this, please proofread, because remember, the piece that you write is going to be seen by the general pubic.
Yes, such a good point. One letter
One
makes a big
letter.
difference.
Exactly. So you brought up before, Karen, the question about AI. And people say, oh, AI can just write this. Well, this is what happened with my cousin, and it just wasn't satisfactory. And I can now give you a few examples because these are anonymous about some clients. As I said, there are plenty of free templates and prompts online, and even online in-person workshops you can take, and you absolutely can write this yourself. However, pre-writing an obituary can feel daunting or emotionally very heavy, and expert help can help to ease that burden. And if you think AI can do a good job, I invite you to try it. And I'll give you some examples. Some of them are pretty funny. I know I certainly did when I started doing this. I asked AI to write my obituary. The first thing that happened, oh, no, this was the person I worked with. I was working with a SCORE counselor, you know, small business, telling him I was doing this new arm. And he tried it. And the first answer he got is, I cannot write your obituary because you are not dead yet. And I said, no, you didn't put in the right info. You have to, you know, garbage in, garbage out. You have to put in. So I wrote, would you help me pre-write my obituary? And it did. And I have to tell you personally, it contains several factual errors, plus information that wasn't necessary at all in summarizing my life. I mean, I didn't need it to list every book I'd ever written, going back to like one of the first vegetarian cookbooks in 1974. That just doesn't matter to me now. You know, that's, I don't care. AI told me that I had been inducted into the National Women's Hall of Fame. That's not true. I was honored there, but that's something much different than being inducted like Gloria Steinem and Betty Friedan. That wasn't me. It told me things that I really didn't want brought up. And it was really kind of weird. So one of my first clients told me that she came to me after she tried using AI, and she was shocked that it told her she was going to die at age 75 when she was 74.
Oh my goodness. Wow.
And put in later, I asked her what information she put in, and AI actually apologized to me and said, no, that was a mistake. I don't know where it came from. And she did outlive 75. She's 76, so it's okay. But obviously it was a computer error, but it really, really creeped her out.
Oh, I can imagine.
Seriously. Another client came to me and he was really embarrassed when he tried AI that it had stuff from his MySpace profile from 2004.
Wow.
and another client who was actually somebody I used to work with said she was shocked to find that AI not only wrote, you know, pretty good outline of her life, but it listed the funeral home where her visitation would take place, as well as the cemetery where she would be buried. And I went, how is that possible? And when she told me what she put in, AI had scanned the internet for places that handled her parents' funeral and visitation and assumed she'd be in the same place.
Wow.
I found that really, really creepy.
Yeah, again, that's it's strangely somehow prophetic, yeah. But I mean, not accurately prophetic.
No,
I mean, it's got to be eerie to read that.
Yeah, it really creeped her out. So I said, let's start over. So go ahead and do it if you want to, but I provide a personal touch and hopefully some empathy and some structure and some peace of mind. So that's what I do. Would you be interested in hearing sort of how I work?
Yes, yes. Tell us that.
Sure. So this is sort of the process, not the whole thing, but an outline of the process. It's really not hard, and I will say this again, it's not hard to write your own obituary, but it's just emotionally fraught. So again, I emphasize you can do it yourself, but I'm here to help if you need it. So we will start with and I work only virtually, as I work all over the place. We start with an interview. I have a guided series of questions. Some of them I just shared. And I might start with, you know, who or what matters most to you? Tell me some of the milestones of your life. And what's interesting, Karen, it's very interesting, is when I ask people that, people often start with negative things, which I find, I don't know, I haven't figured this out yet psychologically, but I find, you know, this happened, I was divorced, or this happened, you know, tragedies and bad things, and then they go on to the good things. I don't know why, but that's what I found. And then we'll talk about personal themes, and if you want your obituary to have a tone, it can be humorous, it can be sort of heartfelt, it can be more formal. Again, you can use religious language or not. I mean, there's somebody in our congregation who died last year, and he was a great punster, and his son and his wife did an obituary for him that contained all kinds of puns and sounded so much like him, and it was so him, and it was beautiful. And other people want it more formal, and that's fine too. So we will start with a draft. We'll assemble the basic biographical facts, like we talk about your birth date, where you were born, names of your parents, your family members, you were preceded in death by whom, and you're survived by whom. Now, obviously, you won't know that till, you know, the end, but your best guess, your education, your career, your hobbies, your interests. And so together, we'll create a first draft, and we'll weave those facts with the tone you want. And then I give it back to the client and say, do you want to make any changes? What do you think? And we'll just keep going until it's kind of what they want. we might want to reorder some of the elements and then update it as life evolves. I talk about how you just want to, you might want to look at it every year, see if anything's changed. Did people survive you? Did people predecease you? So forth and so on. And then when the time comes when you die, your survivors just have to fill in the first paragraph or two, as well as the information about your funeral or memorial service or wake or visitation or Shiva, if there's a religious custom. And then I encourage clients to share a copy, not only with their survivors, but with their executor, and maybe with their estate attorney. So it's all in one place. Yeah, that's kind of it. It
really seems that pre-writing the obituary is a form of a legacy project, that something that you're actually leaving behind that benefits your loved ones, but it contains messages about your life that you hope people will remember.
Yeah, I really think so. It's what would people want to say? How do you want to be remembered? I mean, my kids tease me because I have a few things that they say. Oh, mom always says that. My mother's was always leave the party when you're still having fun. And she did until 3 weeks before she died. And I would say, you know, a favorite quote, a favorite saying, something that you feel really sums up your life and what you want people to remember you by. I don't know. I find it really rewarding. I really enjoy helping people do this. And I think it really gives people some peace of mind. And I don't talk about money here, but people ask, how do you work? I just charge my regular hourly rate for writing, though there isn't a set fee, or because I don't know how long it's going to take. Start with a phone call, we do editing and so forth. And somebody said, well, about how long is it? I said, it's less than you're going to pay your estate attorney for an hour. But do the whole project.
Yeah.
So it's not much. And I just really I love doing this because, you know, I said in addition, as you mentioned, to having published 7 books, I've edited 2 or 3 dozen more. And I was managing editor of a business magazine for 14 years. So I think I'm pretty skilled at taking stuff that people say and making sure it stays in your own words. I don't try to say, oh, don't say it this way, don't say it that way. I try to really honor what people say and how they want to say it. I guess in my work as a professional organizer, I have experience helping really hundreds of clients organize their end of life paperwork. I mean, I'm obviously not an attorney, but I help them organize the paperwork and say, you need to see this person about that and so forth. And again, having co-created Womankind's Financial Literacy Project more than 40 years ago, and for that time, I've taught women how to be more comfortable managing their money, I'm no longer surprised that many people would rather talk about death than talk about money.
Yeah, interesting, isn't it? That's true.
It is. And if I may put in a little plug, I'm going to be presenting next month for the National Association of Productivity and Organizing Professionals, but it's open to the public. It's all online. 10 things every woman needs to know about her money. So that's on November 11th. Anyway, so I really love helping people work through stuff that's hard. And as an editor and as a writer, I like to honor people and their own voices and what they want to say. And it just gives me great satisfaction to know that I can help bring some peace of mind to people, you know, as they do their end of life planning. So that's,
This is such a helpful discussion. And even to me, because I think the obituary is something that hasn't been very high up on my own list. I've just always imagined, oh, somebody else just writes the details, whatever needs to be in the paper. But yeah, it makes sense, as we were saying, this really could be a gift that you leave behind for your loved ones, that could make a big difference in their grieving process and how they navigate the experience after the loss.
Absolutely. I mean, I can't tell you that when I was writing my parents, Both my parents, we didn't, I mean, they were old, but they weren't ill, and we didn't know when they were going to die. So it wasn't like, oh my gosh, they're just on their deathbed. We just didn't know. I wanted to call my mom and said, Mom, which year was it that you did that? Well, no, she wasn't there to ask.
Yeah.
And it was tough, you know, it was really tough. So I think I just want to reiterate as we end, unless you have any other questions, that pre-writing your obituary is an act of kindness, both for yourself and those who you love.
And that's such a good way to look at it. And in some ways, it's not, it doesn't sound like it would be that hard to do, as you've been saying, especially with some guidance and a little help, and that it could be very satisfying and actually help you think about the meaning of your life and what you're doing here and what matters to you and what wisdom you'd love to share.
Exactly right. And as I said, people can come to me if they want at any point in the process. If you've got a draft and you just want me to look at it, that's fine. If you want to start from scratch, that's fine. And if you want to just do it yourself and give it to your loved ones, that's good with me too. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, my market is unlimited and I cannot serve, 200 million people. So
Exactly.
fine with me. But I do really enjoy this work, and I'm really blessed to be able to give people some comfort. That means a lot to me at this stage of my life.
And I really appreciate your guidance of things to include, but also things to think about that we should not include. It never occurred to me to leave out some of those details that could be used to steal someone's identity. I never thought of it, but that's a very real concern these
Yeah,
days.
I mean, if your name is very uncommon, it's not likely, but if it's not, it's entirely possible. And there's scammers everywhere these days, as you well know, and it's so disconcerting for survivors to have to deal with identity theft from someone who's deceased. It's I can't say it's impossible, but it just adds such a huge burden. So there's things you might not want to put in. I really do urge the listeners to really think about this. And it's like writing a will. No one wants to do it, but once it's done, you put it away and it's done.
Yes. And maybe it sounded like one idea also could be, even if you don't want to write word for word the actual obituary, to at least create an outline of what you would like to have included so that whoever does write it has some place to begin.
Exactly. And just to have like some bullet points or something to start with really will help your survivors because, as again, it's a task. First of all, not everybody's a writer. Not everybody feels that comfortable writing. And even if you have a writer in the family, why burden them when they're grieving and in shock and it's all new and they have to, plan the funeral and da 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 and so forth? It just takes some of the pressure off. And there's not a lot we can do for people from beyond the grave, but this is one thing we can do. So it's,
Yeah.
yeah, I really urge people to think about doing this ahead of time. So,
Yes, definitely. So let's make sure it's on the list of things to do as we're looking at our end of life planning.
yeah, absolutely. And I will say, using my professional organizer hat, as I just told someone this morning who called and said, everything is a mess. I don't know where to start. I said, okay, here's where to start. Think about when you're gone, who is going to find your old love letters? And they said, what? And I said, who do you want to see? We all have them tucked away somewhere. If you've had one spouse and one set of children, that's one thing. But if not, who do you want to find your old love letters? I thought, think about that. So there's so many things that we can think about. And there's only, and again, there's only so much we can control. But this is something where we can have some input and some, and a measure of what we want to have said. And again, once we're dead, they can rewrite the whole thing.
So very true.
But we don't. We don't know.
We don't know. Well, I was going to mention I've read a couple of unkind obituaries online that people posted about a loved one that had led a difficult life and had been a difficult person to live with, and the people who wrote the obituary were very honest about that in the obituaries. So I guess we never do know. I never do know what's going to be shared by others. But
it reminds me of the church service where there was a man who nobody, you might have heard this, but nobody liked in the town. He was like the town curmudgeon. And the minister got up and he was trying to give a nice eulogy, and he did the best he could. You know, he was devoted to blah, 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 blah. And it wasn't, nobody liked. And the minister said, "Would anybody here like to say anything about the deceased?" And a man stood up. Finally, nobody said anything. And the man stood up in the back and he said, "His brother was worse." And I thought,
Wow.
but it was like, you don't know what you want people to say bad things about. So say the good things, say the things that people may not know, say the things that you care about. And again, in closing, I just really, you know, especially about charities, because that's important to me. Where would you like donations to go, if that's something you want? And just really think about the things that matter to you and what's going to happen after you're gone. So.
Well, these are such great points. And I'll remind everyone, I'm talking to Gail Shapiro, and her website is gailshapiro.com, if you'd like to go there. And then what's the other website that you mentioned?
Oh, no. That's the only one I have.
Oh, that's the only one. Oh, okay. Okay.
No, I thank you for your time, Karen. I really enjoy talking about this, and I'm happy to help whoever needs help when they need it. And I wish you and your listeners all the best.
Well, thank you, Gail. It's been a pleasure to talk with you also.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Take care.
All right. You too. Goodbye. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Gail Shapiro about writing an obituary. And it was an enlightening conversation with me. I've never really thought for myself about the fact that writing my own obituary could be something important to do. I've never even considered doing that before, but Gail certainly gave me a lot of things to think about. And I especially appreciated knowing what we should not include in an obituary, also something I'd never thought of before. So I think that was a really important tip to remember, that there are things that we should not reveal in an obituary these days, because it simply may not be safe out there to put too much information out in the public arena. And then also, I will always remember the little slogan, "Don't postpone joy." I thought that was wonderful, and I want to remind myself of that every day. That's the one thing not to procrastinate on or postpone. Make sure that joy gets top billing on the to-do list every day, and that's a great reminder for me. So I think it's a good reminder for all of us, because here we are at the beginning of the holiday season as this episode airs. Hanukkah has just begun, and Christmas and Kwanzaa are coming soon. Diwali happened last month, and there's the winter solstice. There's so much happening in the next few weeks, and then also the new year arriving. So what a wonderful time to focus in on joy, even when we're grieving, and to remember that joy and grief can live side by side. In fact, they're intertwined. And so part of our grief process is also hollowing us out in a way so that we can hold and experience even more joy and love than before. So don't forget that. I send you much love during this holiday season for you and all of the beloveds in your life. May you have meaningful time together that lights you up and leaves joy in your heart. I'll be back next week with another new interview. And so until then, remember, we're here for love and also for grief, because they go hand in hand. So face your fear, be ready for whatever life brings you next, and love each and every moment of your very precious life. Bye-bye.